Ben Wink is an economy reporter for Business Insider. You can read more at businessinsider.com, and you can listen to him right now. Hey, Ben, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me back. Good to be here.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about this piece that you wrote just in the last day or so. Four trends that are keeping boomers unemployed and holding the U.S. back from a full recovery. I've heard so many conversations still from people saying, why is it that people aren't going back? What's the deal here?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note, you know, there have been many headlines and many stories about how strong the labor market's recovery from the, you know, the early days of the pandemic has been. It's been a very good recovery from, you know, just looking at top down, right? We're back to record high employment. The unemployment rate is really low. But like you mentioned, there are still some groups that are having a really tough go at getting back into the workforce, right? And there are some factors. You look at the fact that COVID cases are still fairly high. You look at really high inflation. Some people are trying to save on gas or not travel as much. Maybe that will keep them from a commute. There's still some factors that are keeping all kinds of people out of the workforce. But one of those groups that way more than any other age group is really having a hard time getting back to work and finding jobs are senior citizens and older Americans, those about 55 and up. And really, there are a lot of structural problems that are keeping us from getting that group back into the labor force. And, you know, when you mentioned, and, you know, in that headline, it's keeping us from a full recovery. It's keeping us from getting, making up for all the job loss or the job gains, that we would have had the pandemic not happened. We still have so many jobs that would have existed that we would have created. And so that's really what we're trying to get back to.
I'm glad to hear you say that people say 50 and older are having trouble finding jobs, because anecdotally, I've heard from people like that, even in their late 40s, people who haven't filled out a resume in a long time, who haven't been familiar with the online job search process. I think some people just think that there's a little ageism out there, too.
There's definitely a bit of ageism at play, and whether that's, you know, what you mentioned with technology gaps and people just not believing that older Americans can use technology the way they would need to at work. But it also comes down to, you know, a lot of these sectors that are adding the most jobs or still seeing the greatest employment gains are ones that tend to look at younger workers to begin with. I'm talking about restaurants and bars, warehouses as well, and a lot of arts and entertainment jobs. Those sectors really prioritize youth, and they look for younger workers on average way more than others. And when you look on the other side of the spectrum, public work, you look at management, real estate, they tend to hire older workers. The median age of their employees is higher, but they're just not adding jobs at the same rate, right? They were not hit the same way by the early days of COVID and that recession. And so they're just not seeing the same kind of growth and the same growth prospects. So there's ageism at play. There's structural problems with which sectors are hiring the most. They tend to look at younger workers. Yeah. And overall, it's just making for a really tough environment for older Americans to get to work.
Here's a headline. The pivot to remote work. So this is when we went home, accounted for 60% of the U.S. home price surge. Prices have gone up. And for every $100, you're saying 60 of those were just the demand for housing because people were moving to bigger or better houses, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, there's this new study from the San Francisco Fed that found that a strong majority of that price rally that happened through the pandemic is related to the shift to remote work. And with that, you know, you have to think about all the people who left cities and moved to more rural or exurban areas and how that really invigorated those markets. And also how people are staying home. And so they are prioritizing, you know, what they want from a home office a bit more and you know, looking to invest a bit more in their home buying and then maybe spring for a more expensive home because we're just all spending more time at home. A lot of people are still working remotely. And so that's playing a big factor in the home price surge. And as people start to get back to offices and go back to working in a corporate or an office environment, maybe that'll reverse some of that trend. But for now, we still have home prices at really high levels.
Real quick, what can we learn from what's happening in Great Britain right now about the taxes and so forth?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story and one that's developing, it seems, by the hour. You know, I think the important thing to keep in mind is, you know, the skepticism toward that tax plan and the market's reaction really does hint, give some good hints as to, you know, what economies need right now. I think, you know, the tax plan was marketed as a way to kind of give the British economy a jolt, but looking further out, and once that sugar high is over, they would be, or at least what markets are signaling, is they would have to deal with some serious deficit issues. And what investors are worried about is a higher risk of default. And so while a short period of some stronger economic growth does sound appealing, I think you have to look further out and think, is this going to help with inflation? Is this going to help with a lot of the headwinds that we're facing, aside from just some slowing growth?
You wrote, UK Prime Minister Liz Truss has been in office for just 22 days, but her new plans to cut taxes on the wealthy have already sent markets plunging, solicited ire from an international banking group, and sown outrage among the country's taxpayers. You can read the full story at businessinsider.com. We'll talk again, Ben. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Joan Salzman is a senior reporter at CNET.com. Joan, I'm reading about some of the new things Amazon is going to be releasing, not delivering, say, for everybody else, but actually their own stuff. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, yesterday Amazon had its fall device unveiling for the year. This time, I mean, they do this every year. They have a sort of everything but the kitchen sink sort of unveiling, where it's just device after device after device after device. You know, some years they've had a clock. I think there was maybe a microwave at some point. And this year, there were some more devices. There was some of the kind of noteworthy ones are, I'm sure people remember or still use, the Kindle e-reader. They have a Kindle Scribe, which is an e-reader that you can draw on with a stylus. So it allows you to sort of take your own notes on its simple Kindle e-reader. And there's also this Halo Rise sleep tracking sunrise wake-up lamp alarm clock that tracks your sleep. If you don't want to have to wear a watch that you would rather charge overnight, it tracks your sleep from your bedside table with some sensors. Those are just some of those events. It's all coming before a new sales event that they're going to have in October in a couple weeks, or in about a week and a half. So that sort of sandwiched in between Giant Prime Day and then that Black Friday shopping window.
I see that they've got new Echo Smart speakers, new Ring and Blink security cameras. I got to get me one of those Ring security cameras. So many people here in the Chicago area know or have property in Florida. And so they've been all looking at their Ring video cameras to see if their property is still there. And I was literally watching the front door of somebody's house in Naples yesterday the trees were blowing. But, you know, as a security device, it seems like a pretty good idea. What's new, or what do you like in that sector?
Well, they have a lot of not only Ring, but also these Blink security cameras. There are ones that have floodlights that you can put on your house, ones that have less floody floodlights that you can put on your house. There's like a new sort of stand for one of these minier cameras that can pan and tilt. So, you know, the situation that you described on the front of somebody's door, being able to see Hurricane Ian.
Really?
I mean, this wouldn't go on your door. This is something more like a tabletop, but it's a stand for a camera that can, as it says, pan and tilt the camera. So they have a lot of different security options. The thing with Ring and Amazon and, you know, kind of the constant consideration is around privacy. Especially, you know, Ring has been known to share recordings with law enforcement, even stuff like that without people knowing that footage recorded on the Ring camera has been shared with law enforcement. And then Amazon, with its kind of voice command technology, they're very clear that it's only listening when you say the wake word Alexa, or whatever the wake word is. But the everybody that has one of these Alexa enabled devices, in fact, I've been saying it a lot now on air, which I know it frustrates a lot of people who have an Alexa, because things like this can trigger it to start listening, and those recordings are by default saved and recorded. You can control that. So that's the consideration to keep with any of these Amazon security systems.
You all wrote about text to video. What does that mean?
It's a little bit like it sounds. It's being able to, and a machine learning, being able to create videos simply from text prompts. So writing in a video of a dog wearing a cape flying through the sky will create a video of it. Now, there have been some popular tools similar to this, like DALL-E, these text-to-picture, text-to-image artificial intelligence tools, where you can tell it to, like, you know, create a dolphin that can fly with a rainbow coming out of its dorsal fin. And it would create something like that. But this is a little step beyond that, moving it into moving images rather than still images.
Is that an app or a feature on a device? How do you do that?
Yeah, well, for right now, Meta plans to release a demo of this. It's called Make a Video, appropriately titled. Yeah. It's called Make a Video. They're going to release a demo of it, but the tool itself isn't available for everyone. There are a lot of concerns around abuse of tools like this. So for the time being, they're going to release a demo video of some of the videos you can make with Make a Video. And they're also, the AI team at Meta will be taking image requests through its Twitter account.
Are Google Maps going to change?
Yeah, Google is continuing to progress to make its search and map results have more video and more imagery, with the hope of making them more immersive, richer, and more visual. So, for example, if you're searching a restaurant in Google Maps, soon you'll be able to scroll down to find additional filters for things like dietary elements, dietary restrictions, like being vegan or vegetarian. You'll even have notes about a restaurant's vibe, something that could make you know what makes it special.
Okay, well, I guess that's good. I don't want the mapping, though, to get any more complicated than it is. I think simplicity, show me how to get there, is all I really want my maps to do. If I don't hit all those other tabs, I guess I won't worry about it. But the mapping is, to me, the most critical thing.
Navigation. You want pure navigation, pure and simple.
Yeah, I don't want to know what the vibe is, but again, that's me, and that's not progress, so I'll leave it at that. These are all interesting stories, and you can find them at CNET.com. Joan Salzman is a senior reporter there. Hey, Joan, thanks for your thoughts today. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
I'm John Williams. Sometimes we talk to Rebecca Ryan, the economist and futurist. RebeccaRyan.com is her website, and today it's about, I didn't know that October was a strike-filled month. Is that typically what happens? Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Nice to talk with you again. We have called the last two Octobers in 2021 and now in 2022 Striketober. And they're not always called that, but what we know from history is that after a big national setback, it happened after the Great Depression, it happened again after World War II, unions and workers start to feel their strength and start to ask for more after coming back from a big national setback. And that's what's been happening since COVID, is workers in the fall are heading to the picket lines.
Yeah, what first comes to mind is Starbucks, Google. I'm thinking of some of the big brand names in America whose companies have had to deal with unions rising. Unionism is more popular now than it used to be, right?
Well, yeah, there's been, like, in the Chicago area alone, there's been a 45% increase in petitions. So this is workers who are saying, we want to form a union. And in the U.S., it's even higher at 58%. So, yes, these big brands are getting the attention. But there were 15,000 workers who went on a three-day strike in Minnesota. There were 1,100 timber workers who went on strike recently in Oregon and Washington. We've heard of teachers and staff. Columbus, Ohio just had 4,500 teachers go on strike. It's happening in Seattle. So it's pretty widespread, and it's not just the big brands. It's happening in, you know, local communities as well.
And is it that the workers feel like they have the leverage right now because businesses have had trouble staffing?
I think some of it is that, John, and I think some of it is also just burnout and fatigue. Like, this week, you saw the United flight attendants picketing at both O'Hare, and at Midway, and they are saying, what the nurses are saying, what the teachers are saying, which is we are burned out. We need a break. We need to be compensated for all the things, all the time and effort we have put in to kind of keep our institutions humming during this time.
You wrote that Chicagoans are organizing their workplaces at a rate the city hasn't seen in more than 10 years. It's at the top of the list for cities with the most union petitions. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is really workers getting more rights, more compensation, different benefit packages. This is a tide. This is a wave that's moving right now across all workers, whether they're organized or not. So Chicago, big-time union town, they are leaning into this trend. And so you're seeing communities like Chicago and other big union towns really leaning in on this.
I just heard me say, wow, at that statistic, and I don't mean that in a judgmental way. I'm not saying that's good or bad. In fact, is it good or bad? How do we judge this trend right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily good or bad either. It's to be expected. I mean, anytime there's an increase in workers who are asking for more and employers who are willing to give it, because that's what happened last year. The workers who asked for more often got it. We saw all manner of raises happening before the end of the year, new paid time off policies announced, even in non-organized shops, you know, like consulting firms and accounting firms. You were seeing it everywhere. So it's not surprising to me. I'm very interested, though, in looking at some of the long-term impact of this. So as one example, there's been the fight for 15. You know, how do we increase the minimum wage, which hasn't been increased in decades? And so there was a fight for 15 that was organized. And I think what you're seeing right now with the move to more union petitions, with workers getting together and asking for a different deal at work, I think you're going to see the minimum wage, while the federal government might not officially increase it to 10 or 20 bucks an hour, you're going to see in the markets themselves are going to start to correct in that direction, and people are going to be earning more. We've been seeing this all the way along, and this organization is taking it even to the next level.
We're talking to Rebecca Ryan. She's an economist and futurist. Her website is RebeccaRyan.com. She's a regular guest here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You know, this workers' right amendment is getting a lot of attention here in Illinois. What do you know or think about that?
Yeah, I'm aware of the workers' right amendment, and I know that the unions strongly favor it. And then you've got the Manufacturers Association and the Chamber of Commerce who, you know, don't want to see this go through. And again, when I just look at the arc of history and sort of where we are, where we've been over the course of the pandemic and where we're probably headed, I think this is being introduced now just to ride the wave of what we've been talking about. You know, more union organizing is happening in Chicago. More workers are trying to get petitions to unionize. You're seeing more walkouts happening across the U.S. So from a timing perspective, I think it's wise on the part of the labor unions to be advocating for this now.
I just want to quote something from the Workers' Rights Amendment. 2022 ballot will ask voters whether they wish to establish a constitutional right for employees to organize and bargain collectively so that they may negotiate, as they say, wages, hours, and working conditions, and to protect their economic welfare and safety at work. So this is something we will vote on here. I did get a text about this earlier this week, and it said, John, how about giving us the lowdown on that workers' rights amendment? How much are the union bosses spending to get this passed? Who got this on the ballot? Another pension fiasco in the making? Guaranteed property tax skyrocket increase? So this person isn't on team union, but they are, I think, fairly asking the question, who's going to pay for all of this? You know, if we're all going to pay more for labor or give better benefits to labor, as maybe we should, then what's the cost to the consumers or to the taxpayers?
I mean, you know, I'm just north of you in Wisconsin, and we've got a similar issue. So the University of Wisconsin nurses threatened to go on strike, and it's a big question in our state because we don't have clear legislation like you guys are going to be deciding about whether workers can or cannot unionize. So, you know, I think the texter's question is very valid. And that should be part of the discussion. So if we say, yes, workers can organize, unionize, I mean, that maybe that sounds great, but we have to understand as a futurist, I would say, let's think of the long-term consequences of what this will mean, and that should certainly inform your vote, because at the end of the day, you know, somebody will have to pay for it. And if it's a matter of, oh, everybody pays 25 cents more on their annual tax bill, that's not much. But if it's, you know, something that's a lot higher or has longer-term implications, we should know that going into the voting booth.
Rebecca Ryan, economist and futurist. Read more at RebeccaRyan.com. Hey, Rebecca, good to hear your voice as always. Let's talk again sometime soon.
Take care, John. Thank you.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, and here's more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The owner of Yorktown Center in Lombard is moving forward with plans to tear down the mall and build an apartment complex in its place. Cranes reports the plan includes the construction of hundreds of apartments on the 1.4 million square foot property. California-based Pacific Retail Capital Partners and local construction firm Synergy Construction hope to break ground on the project next spring, with completion scheduled for 2025. In addition to apartments, the project will include a 3-acre park. The village of Lombard still has to approve the plans. Candy maker Ferrara is accused of endangering its workers at a plant in suburban Bellwood, exposing employees to amputation hazards. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration says Ferrara exposed workers to amputation hazards by not cutting the power to machines before workers cleared jams and serviced equipment. The U.S. Department of Labor has proposed a nearly $200,000 fine. It's the third time in 5 years the company has been cited for amputation hazards at the facility. The company has 15 business days to respond to the accusations. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Mm-hmm. And we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDrivesChicago.com. It has not been a great couple of weeks for Beyond Meat. There was the alleged nose-biting by its COO. Another top exec decided to call it quits. And for the total fake meat industry, sales are down. Chicago-based IRI says retail sales of refrigerated meat alternatives are down 10.5% from September a year ago to now. And their market share of total meat sales remains at or below 1.5%. That still amounts to quite a lot of money being spent on them. But are they healthy? Should you be feeding them to your kids? Here's an expert.
My name is Courtney Shuckman. I'm a registered dietitian at the University of Chicago Medical Center within the Department of Gastroenterology.
And she says if you're excluding real meat in favor of plant-based burgers and sausage and the like, you're making a mistake.
We do know from some recent research that these plant-based meat alternatives are not equivalent to animal protein sources. So they are lacking in some of the nutrients.
And just to be clear, she is not talking about
unprocessed whole food sources like beans, lentils, nuts, seeds, tofu. Those are not what I'm referencing here. It's more of like the plant-based burgers and sausages and hot dogs.
And if you're a parent or grandparent who has decided your child is better off without real meat, studies have shown that you are potentially depriving them of nutrients they need for brain and body development, mainly amino acids.
Amino acids are basically the building blocks that make up a protein. In animal sources like meat and poultry and dairy products, these provide a complete protein source, so they contain all of the essential amino acids, whereas plant-based proteins do not.
But life is all about balance, isn't it? And she is not advising against a plant-based diet.
Correct. And I always advise that anytime someone's interested in pursuing more of a plant-based diet, which I highly encourage because that's where you're getting more nutritional value, you want to make sure that you're doing it appropriately, especially for your children. If they are following more of a plant-based diet, you want to make sure they're getting enough calcium, protein, iron, and those tend to be the bigger ones that are missing in a plant-based diet.
Courtney Shuckman, she's a registered dietitian. From the farm to your belly, today is National Coffee Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Jesse Keene is the director of sales and catering at the Forrester Hotel. This is part of our Your Hometown series we're featuring today in Lake Forest. And this is one of the first hotels to open up in a very long time up there, a unique upscale hotel with a neat event coming up, too. Hey, Jesse, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. First, just tell us about the Forrester Hotel and the Oaken Bistro and Bar, which is there.
Yes, absolutely. So we really pride ourselves on being a modern, upscale destination. Boutique luxury hotel is what we are. And then the Oak Inn Bistro is such a beautiful highlight of this property, specializing in upscale modern American cuisine.
You guys are doing a kind of a date night for Sweetest Day, October 15th, right?
We are. We're very excited.
Give me some of the details on this. This is nice to know. October 15th, drive up or down or over to Lake Forest and take advantage of what? What do we do on the 15th?
Yes. So we are partnering with the Lake Forest Dance Academy. This is the second year we are, so we are very excited to partner with them. And it is a dinner and dance. So what it is Roomba lessons that are led by an instructor of the Lake Forest Dance Academy, and that will be followed by a three-course dinner that includes appetizers, dinner, dessert, and wine. And it's $199 per couple and can be purchased through our website, which is oakandbistro.com.
I love that you've included something to do. A lot of times when people have date night specials, it's, you know, food and beverage in the restaurant and then stay in the hotel and you get to use the facilities. But you've actually got an activity. And I think learning to dance, and my understanding is you don't need to be a dancer. You don't need to have to know how to do the rumba to take this lesson. I think that is very, very fun.
That is absolutely correct. Yeah, so I think that is great because it is indeed a lesson as opposed to an event for, you know, established dancers. So it's all about having fun, learning, being with your partner, and having an amazing and unique night. Like you said, also not just going out for dinner, which, you know, we all tend to do, but doing something different and fun. It's going to be an amazing night.
My wife and I took a lot of dance lessons. I love it. I really do. And I got to tell you, after a lot of lessons, I am not very good. But but it's also surprisingly good exercise. And it's also just a surprisingly fun thing to do with somebody, you know, that you've been married for years or maybe you're just dating. But this is a unique activity. And it really is a nice shared experience, isn't it?
Agreed. Did you ever do rumba?
Yes.
When you took it?
Yes.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I'm terrible at it. But we had a great time doing it. And and it doesn't matter how good you are. You get the hang of it pretty quickly. And then it's just how good do you want to be or are you? Okay, so this is going to be on the 15th of October, starting at 6 p.m. That's when the dancing begins. There'll be food and beverages and overnight stay. This is part of a Sweetest Day package at the Forrester Hotel. It's in Lake Forest and the Oak Inn Bistro and Bar. Sounds really good, Jesse. Anything else we should know before we let you go?
Yeah, just the last thing is the dance portion will be in our ballroom. So it'll be a lovely, lovely room. The hotel has only been open for a year and a half, so everything is brand new. It is beautiful, and everyone will love it. So we look forward to welcoming people, you know, from Lake Forest. Like you said, we do see people from the city, so excited to welcome everyone to the Forrester Hotel.
Yeah, I was wondering, are your clients out-of-towners who are doing business in Chicago, or are they folks from the region who are using it as a little weekend getaway or weekday getaway?
Yeah, really quite a mix. We're very lucky to be situated near a lot of headquarters for corporations, so we do see a lot of corporate travel, but also we see a lot of local Lake Forest residents looking to do a little staycation, and then we do draw people from the city, so we are lucky to have a great mix from all over.
Jesse Keynes, the Director of Sales and Catering at the Forrester Hotel. Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you so much.
October 15th at Sweetest Day, did you know?